We're on Mem Dalet Omer Aleph. 7 lines from the top or so. It says, Omer Le Abaye Le Rava. Abaye said to Rava, Mai Shna Lulav Din Le Shiva Zecha LaMikdash. What's the Shna difference? What's the difference between Lulav that we make for it 7 days Zecha LaMikdash? We take Lulav all 7 days of Sukkot as a Zecha LaMikdash. Certainly in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. Nowadays, right, we don't do it on Shabbos. And by the Arava, we have Hashanah Rabbah, one day, but it's not every single day of Sukkot. We don't have a Zecher LeMikdash, despite the fact that they did something with the Aravas every single day of Sukkot in the Beis HaMikdash. So why is it that our Zecher LeMikdash for Lulav is every day, and our Zecher LeMikdash for Arava is only one day? Amar Le, so Rava responded to Abaye, and he said, Hoyavon yotzidei chavasai be'arava shebelulav. Hoyil, since the Adam, that a man, yotzei, can fulfill yedei chavaso, his obligation, with the arava in the lulav. Interesting theory. We have, sometimes people wear two hats. They could be killing two birds with one stone. Any other metaphors we could do? Sometimes people can be doing two things simultaneously. So if I... How do you kill two birds with one stone?
Small birds, big rock.
How do you wear two hats? Sometimes a person can serve two roles simultaneously. He can do two things at the same time. So the aravis and the lulav, aravis seems to be suggesting, are both aravis that relate to the lulav, and independent aravas that have nothing to do with the lulav. On the one hand, they're one of the arvaminim. On the other hand, in the Beis HaMikdash, you used to go around the mizbeach and lean up against the mizbeach. There are aravas every single day. So we go around our mizbeach. What am I talking about? We go around our mizbeach with our lulav. The Torah. We bring the Torah to the... To the bima,
yeah.
Whatever you can call it, whatever you want. Most people call it bima. To the bima that's in the middle of the shul. Why do we do that? So I think I've mentioned this to you before. Every single shul, of course, we know is a miniature Beis HaMikdash. That Yechezkel HaNavi already told us. Ve'yilhem laMikdash Ma'at. I'm going to be for them a Mikdash Ma'at in Galus. We have a Mikdash Ma'at, but it's structured like a Beis HaMikdash, right? Why do we keep our Sifrei Torah in this big fancy aron with a paroches? Why don't we just put it on the shelf nicely? I'm afraid someone's going to steal it, so we got to lock it up.
That's
you don't need a paroches for that. You need a nice safe. The answer is, as the Rambam says, because in every Sefer Torah are the 10 commandments. So what? Says the Rambam, I want you to know something. When written in every Sefer Torah are the 10 commandments, it's not just information. It's because a Sefer Torah is also the luchas. Talk about wearing two hats. A Sefer Torah is not just a Sefer Torah. Because in every Sefer Torah is the Aseres HaDibros, it has a halachic status of luchos. The luchos are in every shul. So what? Says the Rambam, what did the Kadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu when he brought the luchos down from Har Sinai? V'samtem ba'aron. You have to put them in an aron. The aron was not made yet. The golden aron with the kruvim was not made yet. So what aron? The answer is there's a halacha. Luchos have to be in an aron. It's a din. So guess what? We have luchos in our shul. We have luchos. So where do we have to put it? To be in an aron. So that's why in the front of the shul, we always make sure that our Sefer Torah, our luchos, are in an aron. And there's a paroiches, because that's the Kodesh HaKadashim. And the Kodesh HaKadashim had a paroiches in front of it. And there's this cool little light in front of it, you know? And it's called a ner tamid. Why do we call it a ner tamid? Because it's always supposed to be lit. Why? Why? Who says? The answer is you find that exact phrase, Laha Alois Ner Tamid, by the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. That's our menorah in our little miniature Beis HaMikdash. Our menorah is the Ner Tamid in Shul. And there's a little amud in front of the Shul where the Chazan Daven's from. And David HaMelech refers to Tfilos as Kitaris. Tikkun Tfilasi Kitaris Lefanach, Kadosh Baruch Hu, my Tfilos should be pleasing to you. Like Reach Nichoyach, like the scent of the Keteris. So the Mizbeach HaKeteris is there too. Shulchan's a little bit harder to find. Maybe if it's Stucklebox or the fact you always say, I gotta have a Kiddush in Shul or a Tikkun Olam. But, what? Why is it a Shulchan? Where's the Lechem Apanim? Where's the Lechem Apanim? So I think maybe it's because you always have to have a Stucklebox in Shul. And that goes to the Aniyim, and the Lechem Apanim represents Parnasa. Doing sure we're Mepharnes the Aniyim, that's why people get stuck on Shul. But in any case, there's something else that's called the Bima. The Bima is always in the middle of the Shul. The Reform decided they want to be like the Christians, and that the Bima has to be where? In the front. And when you go to a conservative temple, you go to one of those Reform places, the Bima is in the front of the Shul. And they lay in the Torah facing the audience. And that was considered to be a big no-no. Those, the Rabbanim, the Gedolim, were very against that. They thought that was messing around with the Beis HaMikdash. How so? Because that represents the Mizbeach of Korbanos. How do I know that? Who is in Shulis Bashavis? Everybody? How many Sefer Torah?
Three.
Excellent. Where did we read them from? The Bima. We read the Sefer Torah in the Bima. What did we read for Shvi'i? Who remembers?
Rosh
Chodesh. Yes?
Why were there three?
Because it was the Parshas HaShavua VaYikra, it was Rosh Chodesh, and Parshas HaChodesh, because it was actually Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So wait a minute. Yehuda, you said we read the Parsha for Rosh Chodesh, correct?
Yeah.
You're half right.
So we read half of it.
You're half wrong.
The Parsha with two names of
them. What was Shvi? Where did it start and where did it end?
Shabbat.
Ubiyum HaWhat?
Shabbat.
Shabbat is Rosh Chodesh? So I don't think anybody ever noticed this, but let me let you in on a little secret. Every single time we have a chag where there is a tefilas musaf, Shabbos is different. There's musaf on Shabbos, correct?
Yeah.
Why do we daven musaf, by the way?
Additional.
Because there's additional karbanos. And in tefilas musaf, what do we say? We say, please Hashem, give us a nice day. No, we recite the korban, the additional korban. That's why it's called musaf. The additional musaf. The additional korban. We are reciting the additional korbanos of that day. That's why we have korban musaf. I mean, tefilas musaf. We only have tefilas musaf when there would have been a korban musaf. In addition to what? The regular korban, which is the... Every single day there was a korban tamid. The constant korban. So in addition to the Korban Tamid, there is additional Korbanos, Musaf. That's why Tfilas Musaf. But Shabbos being the exception for a minute, every time we have a Yontif, what do we always read from after? The Korban, the additional Korbanos of the day. So in addition to Tfilas Musaf, we read the Musaf from the Sefer Torah every single Yontif. Yes? Or no? Yes. Maftir is always the korban of the day. Shabbos is exception. We don't do that for some reason on Shabbos. On Shabbos, all we lain is Parshas HaShavua. We don't lain the korban. But, where do we lain from? The Bima. What do we lain on the Bima on a Yom Tov? The korban. Why? Because that Bima is our Mizbeach. That's our mizbeach, so we lay in the korban. So it's interesting. On a regular Shabbos, we don't do this, but when it's Rosh Chodesh and we're going to lay Rosh Chodesh korban, what do we always add to it? We have a Shabbos, the korban for Shabbos. We don't usually do it, but since we're doing the korban for Rosh Chodesh, we backtrack a few psukim and we always throw in the korban for Shabbos too, since we're reading from that parsha anyhow. No, parsha pshat. We're bringing the korban for Shabbos too. So every single shul, that's how it's structured. It's structured like a miniature Beis HaMikdash. So, Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu, Chevra, in the Beis HaMikdash, what did they go around? The Mizbeach, with the Lulavim, with the Aravis. What do we do on Sukkot? We go around our Mizbeach. Zecher LaMikdash. That's our Zecher LaMikdash. Isn't that beautiful? That's what we do. Every Sunday, everything they said, we're going to go to shul, and we're going to reenact a real serious Zeichel HaMikdash. Not just we just pick up the lulav and asterisk and we shake it. We do that too. But we walk around our Mizbeach, just like they would have done on the Beis HaMikdash. And that's what you should be thinking about. You should be thinking, this is a Zeichel and Mikdash. This is why we're doing it.
Oh, there's three sacred Torahs.
Yep.
When did the whole thing finish?
You mean how long was that happening on Shabbos? Is that your question?
Yeah, long.
It's okay.
No, I'm seriously...
What? It wasn't so long. It wasn't so great. It was hollow also because it was Rosh Chodesh, so it took a little bit longer. But you sing, you know. You gotta sing
hollow. Okay, so what's regular? I don't know what's regular by.
On a regular Shabbos, it's just Kriya Sotar, just the parsha. There's no hollow.
And
when
is that? 12?
To each their own. What do you mean? Everybody has their own pace, and everyone sings certain things, other places don't sing. Everyone takes their own.
Everybody.
My particular shul?
Yeah.
Oh, in my shul, on a typical Shabbos, we start at 9 o'clock, we're done 11:15. Sefer Torah was an extra 15 minutes, maybe.
Uh-huh.
That was this halal also. It was with halal and extra.
Like 12:30.
And then we had a very beautiful kiddush.
1 o'clock.
Okay. So, back to the Gemara. So the Gemara says, well, we're going around the Mizbeach with our lulav, and one of the things in the lulav are our rabbis. So maybe we can have our rabbis wear two hats. Not only does it count as one of the four species of the lulav, it'll count as our rabbis as well. You a fan of this idea? It's not very recognizable that that's what we're doing, right? So that's what Rabbi told Abaye. Amar lei, so Abaye said back to Rabbi, "Hu mishum lulav hu deka avid lei." Come on, you're doing that for a lulav. You're not doing that for a rava. If you'll say maybe he picks it up and then he goes back and picks it up, right? From gavoa, right up. He lifts it up and he goes back and lifts it up again. Maybe there's, you know, we'll sort of make it recognizable that we're doing two different things. So we'll pick it up once for the purpose of lulav, and then we'll put it down. We'll pick it back up this time for the purpose of a rava. Maybe you should put down the esrog. I don't know. But it happens every day, meaning but it's a regular occurrence. The loyka of din and hachi, that we don't do that. Nobody does that. So come on. So Rava's answer seems to be rejected.
Actually, when you think about it, at least before davening, usually I go to the sukkah, you shake, and then afterwards you pick it up again when you do a.
Okay.
When you do a halal.
Okay.
I mean, now I'm not saying one is the other one, but there you can say that one of them you're picking up for the...
So what do you see from here? That Abaye didn't do that. Abaye was not a makubal that there's no talulav in the sukkah and they came into the shul. Yeah. Right? The ancient minig, as it says in every single sitter probably, is that right before halal, everybody picks up their lulav and their esrog upside down, and they make the bracha. The first day you say shechianu also, and then you flip it the right side up, and then you shake it in all the directions, do the hokey pokey, and then we start halal all together. And then there is a different minhagim. If you put it down at that point and you do the hakafis later, or if you do them at the same time. Okay. So the Gemara has a different answer. Hachiyama Rav Zvid Mishmei de Rava. Rav Zvid said something else, also in Rava's name. Lulav de Araisa Dinan Shiva Zeichel HaMikdash. Lulav, which is de Araisa, we make 7 days of Zeichel HaMikdash. A Rava derabanan, but a Rava which is derabanan. Lo yavdinan l'shiva Zeichel HaMikdash. We don't do 7 days as a Zeichel HaMikdash. So Rava seems to be claiming, Rav Zvid Nim Rava, that lulav is deraisa, and a Rava is derabanan. Frek de Gemara akasha liman. According to whom? Who holds that a Rava is the Rabbanan? Eleim ala Abba Shaul, if you'll say according to Abba Shaul, ha'amar. But he said, arve nochal. When the Torah tells us what the Aravas are, it refers to them as the arve nochal, right? That's the whole question. Do the Aravas actually have to grow near water or not? Is it a hidur that they grow near water? Because they're called arve nochal. The Aravas that grow along the river. But why is it called arve nochal? Just say, you know, Arava, Shtol Nachal, I don't know, say it's singular. Why does that have to be in the plural? So you know, some people say, there's a lot of different versions, there are a lot of answers to this question. One question is because you have to have two of them. That's our minig, right? We have two Aravas. But Abba Shaul said, no, it's because there are two mitzvahs of Aravas. The two mitzvahs of Aravis. Ksiv shtayim. Two are written in the pasuk. Arvei, plural. Achas lulav, achas lemikdash. Because one is for the mitzvah of lulav, and one is because there's a separate mitzvah of Aravis in the Beis HaMikdash. So the point of the Gemara is that Abba Shaul clearly holds that the mitzvah of Aravis is Daraisa. That's the point. The mitzvah is Daraisa. Either Rabbanan, and if it's those who argue with Abba Shaul, so you'll say, well, they're obviously the majority. They're the ones that hold that Arava is Darabbanan. Heh, not so fast. Hilchas Gamirila. You know what Hilchas Gamirila means? It means halacha lamoshe misinai. It's a halacha that they learned out. Gamirila means that's halacha lamoshe misinai, which, by the way, has a status of deraisa or derabanan. Deraisa. Halacha lamoshe misinai means it's Torah shebal peh. It's just not written clearly in the Torah in any way. But Moshe Rabbeinu learned it from a Kaddish Baruch himself. The Amar Rabbi Yassin Rabbi Yechon Mishum Minuchun Yeish because beisacharzan eser nitiyos. There is one principle called Eser Netios, the 10 plantings, which we're not going to get into, but it has to do with how much you're allowed to work the land during Shviyas. That's case number one. That's not explicit in the Torah. They're allowed to work the land in those particular situations. Arava is mitzvah number two. And number three, Nisu Chamayim. So these three things, something called Eser Netios, the 10 plantings, the Aravas, and pouring water libations on Sukkis, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. All three of those things are Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. So far, we don't know anyone that holds that Arava is Darabbanan. It's either Daraisa or it's Daraisa. Either it comes from the Pasuk of Arvei Nochal or it's Halacha Moshe Misina. So what are you talking about? There's a difference because one's Daraisa, one's Darabbanan. There's no distinction. Not a good answer. Am Rav Zvid Meshmei D'Rava. So then Rav Zvid says something else in the name of Rava. Lulab D'Isla Ikar Min HaTera. What I meant to say, that's what he sounds like he's saying. What I meant to say was, that lulav, which has ikar min ha-Torah, what does it mean ikar min ha-Torah? The essential part of it is in Torah, meaning what? The lulav is explicitly written. Lulav, which is explicitly written in the Torah, so begvulin, and in the outside Beis HaMikdash, avdina l'shiva zeich l'mikdash. So then we make a 7-day zeich l'mikdash. But arava, the less ikar min ha-Torah, but Arava, which doesn't at all have a reference in the Torah, Abba Shaul thinks that there is a little bit of a remez, right? Because Arvei Nachal, but the Rabbanan, who hold that it's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, since it doesn't have Lesle, it doesn't have Ikar Min HaTorah, and it's anything essential in the Torah, B'Gvulin, Le'avdin and Shiva Zekel HaMikdash, when it's out there, Beis HaMikdash, and after the Korban Beis HaMikdash, we do not make a 7-day Zecher LeMikdash. And that's where the Gemara stops. So what was the Gemara's final answer? That when something is explicit in the Torah, so then we make a 7-day Zeicher LeMikdash. And when it's not explicit in the Torah, it's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, so we just make a 1-day Zeicher LeMikdash. What is that? You have any sense of what is that? Any thoughts?
What? I understand that the Zeicher HaMikdash for the Arava is only 1 day.
Yeah, Hashanah Arava.
Let's start off saying that when we started off, wasn't the whole question about being Zeicher HaMikdash or not being Zeicher HaMikdash? Or was it
the question is, how come Lulav has a 7-day Zeicher HaMikdash and Arava only has 1?
7 days, that's what it was. Not Zeicher HaMikdash, the 7 days.
Because we know there's a Zeicher HaMikdash for both.
Right, okay, that makes sense.
But why is 1 7-day and one only 1? So the answer is, well, because one has Ikar Min HaTorah and one does not.
I don't know why
that's a... So what? So does anybody have a thought about this?
Nowadays, our rabbi, we do 1 day Zeicher HaMikdash.
What?
Our rabbi.
Hashanah Rabba. That's it. But lulav, we do every day, even though the mitzvah lulav is only the first day. So why do we do it all 7 days, 6 days? So the answer is, it's a Zeicher HaMikdash. So... You know, there are some different approaches to this. There's one thing that is definitely worth pointing out, that the Rambam seems to have a little bit of a distinction. The question is like this: is there any difference in halacha between a din daraisa, meaning something explicit in Torah, and halacha l'moshe misinai? That's basically the question. Is there any reason why we would distinguish between them in any way? What? Yeah. Because at the end of the day, they're both deraisa, right? Halacha l'moshe misana is also deraisa. It's just not explicitly written. It doesn't have an ikar. That's what the Gemara says it. It doesn't have an ikar, mina Torah. So, okay, so what? Is there a difference between the two? So somebody's showing him right that the lulav you can't make a zeich lamikdash on the first day of Sukkot. You know why? Because that's the mitzvah anyway, right? You have to take your lulav the first day. So is it recognizable that there's a zeich lamikdash by taking the lulav on the first day? Not at all. So there's no zeich lamikdash by taking lulav on the first day. So then how do you make a zeich lamikdash? So do you make it one of the other days? Aval Rava she'ein la'ikar min ha'Torah b'gavulin klal. Tabi amechad. So for lulav, the way we make our zeich lamikdash is by doing it every 7 days, meaning after the first day, we're still doing it. And what about the Arava? Since it doesn't have an ikar min ha'Torah, in other words, there's no day that it's done outside Beis HaMikdash at all. So then by doing it even one day, everyone says, what are you doing? In other words, you guys ready? Mm-hmm. It's like this. One approach is the Ritva and the Ra'ah. One approach is, it's the expansion of what you would normally do, or doing something different from what you would normally do. So in other words, imagine there is no Beis HaMikdash and there's no Zecher LeMikdash. So what's the mitzvah of lulav? The first day.
Just to shake it.
Pick it up, shake it the first day, right? So by doing that after the first day, you say to yourself, why am I doing this? It doesn't say that in my Torah. So the answer is, that's a zecher l'mikdash. And what about a rava? But there's no mitzvah at all outside Beis HaMikdash of a rava. So by doing it even once, you're making a statement of Zeich HaMikdash. Right. So, you know, you could have argued, well, so do it 2 days for lulav, you know. Also, maybe it would look like a safek. You're not sure if it's the first or the second. Also, do it the last day. Maybe just do it the first and the last day. Why are you doing it on the last day? Zeich HaMikdash. So, okay, it doesn't fully answer the question. But by doing something that you don't have, if you have to do it, you have to do it anyway. There's no zeich lamikdash. So by expanding what you have to do, or doing something different, so doing something you don't have to do at all, so that demonstrates a zeich lamikdash. The Rambam is a little bit funny. The lashon of Rambam is that arava zuhoil ve'ena beferish b'Torah. Since the arava is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah at all, other than the arava in the lulav. Okay. So the Magid Mishnah thinks that the Lashon Rambam is a little strange. Because the Lashon of the Gemara is Ikar Begvulin. In other words, it's really a question of how to read the Gemara. 1 second. Amar Zid Mishmei de Rava. Lulav de Isla Ikar Min HaTorah. Kama? The lulav that has Ikar Min HaTorah, Kama? Bigvulan of Dinan Lashiva Zeich LaMikdash? So then outside Beis HaMikdash you do it 7 days? That sounds like what the Ritva and the Ra'ah were saying, no? Depends where you put the Kama. Do you put the Kama after the word Bigvulan? Lulav, where there is an Ikar Min HaTorah, Bigvulan. Where there is something that is deoraisa outside Beis HaMikdash, Zavdin and Leshiva Zeich LaMikdash. Arava de Lesla Ikar Min HaTorah, Kama? Or Bigvulin, Kama? So the Magid Mishnah, for example, thinks that the Gemara is talking about there's no Ikar Min HaTorah, Bigvulin. I don't know that you necessarily need to be convinced of that way to read the Gemara. But he's saying, why does Rama make it sound like it all depends on whether it's explicit in the Torah? Which that's the way that we read it. We read it, like the Rama read it, that since the Torah doesn't say anything explicitly about a Rava, so one day is sufficient. But why? What's the difference if it's explicit in the Torah or not? So they argue the following. The Gemara in Bechoros, Tes Zayin Omer Aleph, says that there is no oinesh for violating a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. There's no punishment for violating a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. There's only a punishment for something that's explicitly written in the Torah. Mashal l'mahadavar daimar. Do you know the rule? We have a people like to say, I don't want to know that. That's us, sir. I don't want to know that. Why do you want to know that? Because ignorance is bliss. Because I heard that if I don't know that it's usher, then I'm not really doing anything wrong. So I don't want to know that it, you've heard this before? Smiling. This principle is called mutav sheyushogegin baal yumizidin. It's better to do something b'shogeg than it is to do something b'mezid. What's shogeg and what's mezid? Shogeg means it's like accidental, like, you know, the piece of information you're missing. I didn't know it was Shabbos. Or, I didn't know that's usher on Shabbos. So it's a shogeg. You only have to bring a korban chatos. How much do you think a cow costs? All right, a goat, whatever. But invest in cattle. So you have to bring a korban chatos. But if it's mezid, if it's on purpose, so then if a person knows it, and there's no edim or warning, it's okay. He's only chayav kares. And if they're edim and asra, edim that warned him, what does he get? Violating Shabbos? Skila. So it's really better, it's better to not know that it's usher. So it's better not to learn anything, right? Just be ignorant. No, of course not. A person's going to be held accountable for not learning. But what it means is, let's say, and this does happen. And this is quoted in the Ramon, the Mishnah Berurah, and Shulchan Aruch. What happens if you know someone that's doing something wrong? So are you supposed to just let them do the thing wrong and that's it? The answer is no. There's a mitzvah in the Torah called Toichacha that you're supposed to tell them what they're doing wrong. It's supposed to be machiach. Right, we'll get to that. But the starting point is that Kol Yisrael Reivim Zeh LaZeh, we're all responsible for one another. If you could do something about it and you don't, so you're going to be held responsible for not stopping the Avera. You got to make sure we protect people from doing Averas. When we fix the world, he's damaging the world. When a person does an Avera, it damages the whole wide world. So we have to tell him he's doing something wrong. What if you know this person and you know that if you tell them they're doing something wrong, they're not going to listen to you? So then it's better that the damage they do to the world is the damage that's called shogeg, and not the damage they could do to the world by being amazed. In other words, that's assuming that you know them well enough to know that they're not going to listen to you anyway. So until now, they think that they're not really aware that it's a problem. So then it's better for you not to tell them. But it doesn't mean that you should live a life of ignorance and not know that things are prohibited because, well, you don't want to be amazed, you want to be a shogeg. That's not what it means. The person's going to be held accountable for not learning. But it means to say that when we are supposed to tell somebody doing something wrong, there's a principle of mutav shiyu shogeg. Now, that applies whenever something is not explicit in the Torah. So Shabbos is a great example. The only Aveira of Shabbos that's explicit in the Torah is what? Eish, fire. But all the other malachas are not spelled out at all. So when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, so since they're not explicit in the Torah, you don't expect them to just automatically know it. So okay, better that they be shogeg and not amazing. But what about something that's explicit in the Torah? It says it straight up. So what do you mean? So you have to say something? We don't apply the principle of it's better that they just be doing it by accident. Because everybody knows what it says in the Torah. Go open up the article, it's in English. Come on, you don't know that? You know that. Or if you don't, you're held accountable as if you should. You've got to know what it says in Chumash.
So if somebody's eating like a cheeseburger, you're not saying that they're cooking
It's a good question. How explicit does it need to be? You know, when it's a drasha, it's not so clear. You know, it's actually talking about cooking. But Ibn says it three times. It's a good question. You know, where do you draw the line exactly? What's considered explicit and what's not? Maybe right. So here too. So what do you see? You see there's a distinction in halacha between things that are expressed clearly in Shulchan Aruch, in the psukim, and things that are not expressed clearly in the psukim. And so the Gemara says that a person is not punished for halacha. L'moshe mi-Sinai. So there is a distinction in halacha between things that are explicitly written and things that are not explicitly written. And that's the Gemara, a person is not punished for halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. So because of that, we do draw certain distinctions, apparently. And based on that, perhaps that's the chat in the Gemara, that When something is explicit in the Torah, lulav is explicit, so we make a zecher lamikdash appropriately all 7 days. But since it's just halacha l'moshe m'sinai, the arava, so then it's enough that we demonstrate that it's daraisa. We don't actually have to go the full 9 yards, 10 yards, and go ahead and do it all the days. There is a distinction between something that's explicit and something that's only learned out bal peh, halacha l'moshe m'sinai. All right, so be that as it may. Gemara goes on. Amar Reish Lakish. Kohanim bali mumin ichnasin bein ulam velamizbeach kedei leteis barava. Kohanim bali mumin. What are bali mumin? Whenever you use the define something, always use the word in the definition. A mum is just some kind of blemish that a kohen has. It's interesting that kohanim and korbanos share this in common. You know, I walked into a wine store close to Pesach a few years ago, many years ago, and there was this little piece of paper. It was called the Vad for Shalom Bayis. The Vad for Shalom Bayis was distributing these little notes that said, "Ladies, dust is not chametz, and your husband is not the Korban Pesach." You know, don't kill him, you know what I mean? Anyway, so Kohanim and Korbanos do share something in common. They are the Korban Pesach. There's what's called a mum, a blemish for a Korban, and there's what's called a mum in the Kohen himself. So they share a lot of things in common, these mumin. So you could have a Kohen that Rachman al-Itzlan broke his arm, so when it heals, he's allowed to do avoda again. But when it's broken, he's not allowed to do avoda until it heals. He has a mum. If you have a person that may have a permanent mum. That was a great line. When Rechaim Oizer was a big genius, Rechaim Oizer Grzynski, and so I think it was when he got his job in Vilna as the Rav, so he was very young. So he came for his prabha, for his interview, for Shabbos, whatever, and he gave all his drushas and whatever he did, and the word came back to him that they were hesitating to hire him because he was so incredibly young. And like, you know, we're an ancient kahila, we're going to have such a young rabbi, it doesn't look right. So he wrote back to them in a letter something to the effect of, you know, by Kohanim, there are two types of mumim. There's what's called a mum kavua and a mum oiver. Mum kavua, guess what it means? What's a mum kavua? A set mum, a fixed mum. It's not going to go away. And what's a mum oiver?
It'll pass.
A mum that passes. Age is a mum oiver. You get it?
Yeah.
Everybody gets older. Sheesh, this thing on. Anyway, so Kohanim bali mumim, those Kohanim were not allowed to do avoida because they have a mum. Normally, they're not allowed to even enter the space between the ulam and the mizbeach. What's the ulam and what's the mizbeach? Well, the mizbeach we know. It's on the outside of that big room that's called the ulam. The ulam is, technically speaking, the area. Oh, let me put it on the board.
The Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, sometimes it's referred to as a lion. Because, you know, a lion, a male, he has that big furry mane, and it gets skinnier in the back. So in the back is the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that's where the Aron would be. And then you have the Menorah, and the Shulchan, and the Mizbeach for Keteres would be here. This entry area, which was wider, is called the Ulam. Sometimes the whole building is called the Heichal. In front, directly in front, would be the Mizbeach. And the Kevesh, the ramp, would be here. And of course, you know, the fires and around the Mizbeach would be here. In between the two, but a little off to the side, anybody don't know what's here? You know what this is?
The thing we're washing.
Correct. Called the?
Kior.
The Kior. The Kior would be here a little bit off to the side. So this area in between the Ulam and the Mizbeach is off limits for a Yisrael and even for a Kohen who has a mum. Otherwise, a Kohen doesn't have a mum, then he'd be allowed to go there. But the area is off limits for a Kohen that has a mum. Achalik Hashanah is Darais, is Darabanan.
But whatever it is, it's an Isser, he's not allowed to go there. Apparently. Now, of course, if you're going to walk in a circle around the Mizbeach, where are you going to have to traverse? Between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. So what's the story with that? So says Reish Lakish, Kohanim bali mumin, nichnasin bein Ulam v'la Mizbeach. Kohanim that have mumim, even though usually this would be aser, are allowed to enter between the ulam and the mizbeach kidei in order, let's say, to be yotzei, to fulfill the mitzvah, be'arava, with their arava. Let's say it's by arava to go there with their arava. They're allowed to do that. And the question becomes why. So if you hold the iser to go there is a derabanan, so we'll say because they're fulfilling a mitzasase deraisa. So to fulfill a mitzasase, they waived or were never goes there this iser derabanan. If you hold that it's an iser deraisa, then why would you be allowed to go there for the arava purposes if it's aser deraisa? Why would one deraisa beat another deraisa? Any principle you may be aware of? We have a principle called ase doicha lois ase. Then a mitzvah's ase pushes off a mitzvah's lois ase. A very interesting principle. Why should it be the mitzvah's ase pushes off a lois ase? This is a famous Ramban when he comments on the Aseret Dibros in Parshas Yisro, where he writes mitzvah's ase versus mitzvah's lois ase. A lois ase is rooted in yira, in fear. And a mitzvah's ase is rooted in ava, in love. So if a person really loves, he's going to do. Person's afraid, he doesn't. But the love should outweigh the fear. So if there's a mitzvah of love, then that is more important to express than something which is just fear. Okay, but whatever it is, that's the principle asei docha lo sasei. Amar le Rabbi, okay, so what's the principle Rish Lakish said? Rish Lakish had a din, a principle. He claims that the Kohan and Bali Mumin were allowed to be involved in encircling the Mizbeach with Aravas, despite the fact that normally that would be Usr, because they're going to have to be in the area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. Amar le Rabbi Yochanan, Mi Amra, who says? Mi Amra, asks the Gemara. Ha'ihu Amar. He was the one. Rabbi Yochanan was the one that said. Right, you getting this? Rish Lakish says, Rabbi Yochanan, Kohan and Bali Mumin are allowed to be there for the purposes of a Rav. And Rabbi Yochanan says, who says such a thing? That's ridiculous. And the Gemara says, you did. So we said a minute ago, Bishkarsan. This is Rabbi Yochanan was part of this chain. Eser Natias, Arava, when you say Hamayim Alacha Lamoshe Misina. Yet all of these things, which includes Arava, are Alacha Lamoshe Misina. So obviously it would be either because it's Darabanan and therefore it's Doche, or because Asa Doche Losa says so it's Doche. So what do you mean? Who said such a thing? That you yourself agreed to that by saying that Arava is Alacha Lamoshe Misina. Elami Amr bin Natila. What Rabbi Yochanan meant was, who says that you have to walk around the Mizbeach? Remember, we spoke about this before. This is the machlokas that we had before. Do you have to use or shake and walk around with the Arava just like Lulav? Or the only thing you did with the Arava was lean it up against the Mizbeach? Seems to be a historical debate. So maybe that's what Rabbi Yochanan meant. He meant, what do you mean? You're going to allow the Kohanim Bali Mumin to be in the area they're not allowed to be, to lean it up against the Mizbeach, to let them lean it up on the other side. Why should they be there? If you got to walk around, okay, then I understand. But who says you have to walk around? Duma b'zakifa. Perhaps it's just to straighten it up against the Mizbeach. Mi amar b'balei mumen. Duma b'tzimime. And even if you'll say that they actually did walk around the Mizbeach, how do you know the Balei Mumin were allowed? Maybe the only people that were allowed were those who didn't have, called tamimim, tamim. They were perfect, they were complete. Maybe it was only the people that were tamim, not the people that were mumim. Maybe they weren't allowed. Okay? Idmar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yishuv, and Levi. It was said that Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yishuv, and Levi both said something. Chad Omar, Arava Yisoid Nevi'im. One of them said that Arava is what's referred to as Yisoid Nevi'im. What's a Yisoid? A foundation. It was founded by the Nevi'im. V'chad amara Rava minhag Nevi'im. And the other one said that a Rava is not a Yesoid ha-Nevi'im, it is a minhag ha-Nevi'im. Now, minhag we're familiar with. Yesoid is a very funny word. He could have said takanas ha-Nevi'im. That would have meant it's a dinder abanan that came from the times of the Nevi'im or certain Nevi'im. But he said Yesoid Nevi'im, which is a little bit of a funny term. We're not used to that. So we'll have to see in a minute maybe where that came from. But Rashi interprets that in the following way. Do you see where it says Yesoid Nevi'im Hu? It's right in the middle. Rashi writes Yesoid Nevi'im Hu, Takanas Nevi'im Achroinim. See, he learned the word Yesoid to refer to Takana. So what we're going to have to try to figure out then is, well, why doesn't it call it a Takana? So apparently it is a takana, but it's the type of takana that was referred to as a yesoid for some reason, which we'll see in a minute. Yesoid Nevi'im, who says Rashi, Takanas Nevi'im Achroinim, the later Nevi'im, Chagai Zachari Malachi, Chayu, Mimisaknei Takanas Yisrael, Banshe Knesses Hagdaila, who were among those who made the Takanos, as they were a member, they were members of what's called the Anshe Knesses Hagdaila. And what about Minig? Rashi says, Minig Kin Higu Es Ha'am, that the Nevi'im just accustomed the people to doing it. V'lei Tiknu Lahem, it wasn't technically a decree. You want to take a guess? Like, who cares? Is there a difference between a din d'rabbanan and a minig? I mean, how come we don't have to do, right? Kitnias, it's just a minig. Right? Sorry, Sparta. I don't know. What's the difference? Minig is a din. Minig avosenu bi yadenu. Why? What's the difference? Oh, that's a good question. How could it be a minig if it's Allah Alamish Misinai or according to Abba Shol, then the Raisa? We'll get to that in a minute too. But let's say that we're okay with that for a minute. What is the difference at the end of the day? Who cares if it's a minig or if it's a takanas on the VM? Does that matter? So Rashi writes, Vinafka Mina, the practical difference, what comes out of it is the Lebay Bracha. If it's only a minig, there's no bracha. That's interesting. So in other words, Rashi seems to be saying it's all the same at the end of the day. It's binding, it's a din, it's derabanan, you know, it's the same status. But you don't make a bracha on a minig, you only make a bracha on a din derabanan. Interesting. So like a mamer, but sivanu. Because if it's a minig, you can't say a sharkichanu, but mitzusav, but sivanu. The fila bechlau, leisaser lesa. Because it's not included in the prohibition of lo sasur. I want to work out this Rashi for a minute. What is Rashi saying? Rashi is saying, if it's a minig, you don't make a bracha. Why not? Because the problem is you're like lying. Because when you say the bracha, you say, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you commanded us. Wait a minute. Whenever I do something to Rabbanan, God didn't command me. That's the rabbis, right? They're different. They're like people, ears, hair, you know? God is like God. What do you mean? You can't say Asher Kichana Misavet Sivanu at any time you do a din to Rabbanan. Whether it's a minig or a decree or anything. You hear my question? So how could you ever say a bracha on anything derabanan? When you wash your hands for challah, that's a din derabanan. You're chayav to wash your hands. How could you say a shekichan misavet zivanu? How could you say when you're late in Ner Chanukah, a shekichan misavet zivanu? You make an erev tavshilin. How can you say a shekichan misavet zivanu? All these things are mitzvos, in quotation marks, derabanan. So the answer is exactly. Because the Torah says... that, and that's a question exactly who this refers to. In other words, does this refer to, let's say, the Gedolei Ador B'Zman HaZeh, where it only refers to the Anshei Knesses HaGdola, to the Sanhedrin? So, for sure it refers to Sanhedrin of old. Since Torah says, you have to listen to the rabbis, whoever those rabbis may be, those are the rabbis that made all of these takanos. So if you listen to them, are you doing a mitzvah? So it's funny, because there's no mitzvah to listen exactly. The mitzvah is don't not listen. Lo sasur, don't swerve. Okay, so you take a look at the pasuk. It sounds like it's a positive and a negative, whatever it is. Bottom line is, whenever there is a prohibition to ignore what they say, then there is a mitzvah to follow what they say. So by lighting Ner Chanukah, by doing Erev Tavshilin, by washing your hands for challah, you are fulfilling a mitzvah from the Torah of listening to what the rabbis say. So you can say, Asher Kichanu, but mitzvah, it's Sivanu. But, says Rashi, if it's only a minig, it was never in a technical institution, then what's the violation if you don't do it? Do you violate Lo Sasur? Of course not, because the rabbis never told you you have to do it. It's just a tradition that was instituted, not in a technical way. So then a person doesn't violate Lo Sasur if he doesn't do it. So if he does do it, is he Mekayim a mitzvah? The answer is no. It's not a mitzvah listening to the rabbis. The proof is, if he doesn't do it, he's not violating Lo Sasur. So in which case, by fulfilling the minig, you're not Yotze a mitzvah. So you can't say, Asher Kichanu, a mitzvah sa, v'tzivanu. So Rashi says that's the difference between Yisoy Nevi'im and Takanas Nevi'im versus Minhag Nevi'im. That's Rashi. Okay, so back to the Gemara. Itmar Riachan Marishub and Levi, Chadamar Rav Yisoy Nevi'im, Vechadamar Rav Minhag Nevi'im. Okay. Tistayim, let us conclude, Rabbi Yochanan, who? That it was Rabbi Yochanan, Damar Yisoid Nevi'im, who said it's Yisoid Nevi'im. How do you know? Damar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yisoid Nevi'im, who? Because Rabbi said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yochanan said it was Yisoid Nevi'im. Okay, there you have it. Rabbi Yochanan said it was Yisoid Nevi'im, Tistayim. Yes, we will conclude that way, because you don't get clearer than that. Well, he said so. Good, there we go. Amar Rabbi Zeir, Rabbi Vahu, Miyam Rabbi Yochanan, Achi. This is back to what Shlomo said. Rabbi Zera said to Rabbi Avohu, who says Rabbi Yochanan said that? Rabbi Yochanan is the one that said that it is Yesoid Nevi'im, it's a Takana Midirabbanan. But it was Rabbi Yochanan who reported to us that Eser Netiyos, Arava V'Nisa Chamayim, these three things, which includes Arava, Halacha LaMoshe MiSinai, right, Shlomo? That's what you said, right? We just finished saying it was Rabbi Yochanan himself that said it's Halacha LaMoshe MiSinai. So, Rabbi Avohu Ishtoimeim Kishachada. He was silent. He was seemingly confused, but he was quiet for a moment. V'Amar, and then he said, Shchachum V'Chazru V'Yasdum. They forgot. They went back that originally, yes, it was Halacha Moshe MiSinai. Apparently, when they went into Galus, there was some problems, and they lost track of things. People forgot about it. Now, of course, why would they forget about it if they're in Galus? Well, because there's no Beis HaMikdash, and the Arava is a mitzvah in the Beis HaMikdash. So you can understand that without a Beis HaMikdash, things could fall by the wayside. One of the very important reasons to have a Zecher, the Mikdash. But I guess they didn't have a Zecher LeMikdash after the Churban and Bayis Rishon.
What's a Zecher LeMikdash? Is it an actual... Is it just,
when we do things to remember what happened in the Beis HaMikdash. That's why we have for all 7 days. That's why I have a Rava for 1 day. So, okay, so now what we're suggesting is that Rabbi Yochanan, they're both true. On the one hand, it's Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai. On the other hand, it's a Yisoid Nevi'im because it's a Takana of... What? So remember, I asked you, why didn't Rabbi Yochanan, or whoever it was, just call it a Takanas HaNevi'im? Why is it called Yisoid Nevi'im? So that was to make this point. Because for as far as people were concerned, the Nevi'im instituted it. But it's not really true. Nevi'im only instituted it because people forgot about the Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai when they went into Galus. Yeah? So they re-founded something that was really Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai. It just had been forgotten about. How exactly did that happen? And how exactly did they get the information? Was it a nevuah that a Kadosh Baruch Hu said, don't forget about this? Are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed to do things based on nevuah after Moshe Rabbeinu? So this is a fascinating topic, definitely something to get involved in. But certainly one possibility is that, one thing for sure, lo bashamayim hi. You guys remember this Gemara? Yeah. Right. That's right. Very good. Excellent. Tanur Shalach Nai. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, right on target. Do you guys remember it? Everyone remember? No? Yes? Some remember some though? Yeah. Rabbi Eliezer was the one that said that it's all Tahor. The oven is Tahor. Even though it's made out of pieces, it's Tahor. And they said, no. Tell me. And they argued. And Rabbi Eliezer brought all the arguments in the world, and they didn't accept it from him. And then he said, well, if I'm right, then, you know, this, the tree should prove, the tree got up and started walking, the water should prove, water flowed backwards, the walls of the basement, the walls of the side of the basement started to fall down, and Rishua screamed at them and said, Talmidicham, arguing in turbits, your business, and they floated in midair, until finally, Rabbi Lezer says, if I'm right, Minashamayim Yechichu, they should prove it Minashamayim, and a baskol came out from Shamayim and said, Halacha k'Rabbi Eliezer b'chol makoyim, Halacha is always like Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Yeshua jumped up on his feet and he said, 3 words. Loi bashamayim he. So what does that mean? That means you're not allowed to paskin from shamayim. That once the Torah, after. After the Torah is given, it's our responsibility to figure it out. Now, we have Torah Sheba'al Peh, and we have all the tools that we were given in order to do that. But after Moshe Rabbeinu, we no longer have the capacity to just approach a Kadosh Baruch Hu and say, okay, what do you say? And the reasons for that, because the Madrig of Moshe Rabbeinu, and Nevuah's Moshe Rabbeinu, and what it means that he was able to give Torah, and what it means that every other Navi is actually interpreting, and therefore it has a status of Derabbanan, and it can't be like Moshe Rabbeinu, and all kinds of reasons for that.
What was that made?
The rule?
Yeah.
The rule says in the Torah, Lo
b'shem
ha'im. Lo me'ever la'yami. What? What do you mean?
In general, when God was speaking to them or anything was going on, and there was some call or some nebuah or somebody said something.
Yeah.
Why they listen to them?
I'm not understanding the question.
If you're not supposed to listen to that, it's not from Shema.
Not that you're not supposed to listen. You have to listen to the Navi. It's just that whatever is defined as Torah, whatever is called Torah is from Moshe Rabbeinu. And after the Torah is given from Moshe Rabbeinu, so any questions you have in the Torah has to be worked out with the Torah Sheba'al Peh, with man's Seichel. But you can't say, you know what, I'm not sure the answer to that is, let me ask Hashem. Ring, ring. And a Navi goes to the Kadosh Baruch Hu and says, what's the story with plastic? What's the din? It's like cheres, it's like metal. It doesn't work like that. You're not allowed to ask anymore. Yeah, that was halakha. Torah says sota.
Finds out. No, not sota. I'm talking about where they write Hashem's name on a piece of paper and they like put it underneath their pillow. They have a question and it's answered like while you're sleeping.
So I guess that's not a psakalova. You're allowed to ask the Navi, like, what should I do with my life? Like, what do you think a direction is? Like, you're allowed to go to Navi and ask them questions. But halakha, Torah, you're not allowed to get minashamai.
There was also a halacha about like when to go to war or not. No,
that was the mitzvah to go to war and bitumen, but it's not a halacha. It's a question: will we be successful? Should we go? It didn't end the communication between Hashem and man. No. That's not what it means. It doesn't mean that you know there's no longer a communication between Hashem and man. There were neviim after that. It means to say that whatever is considered a halacha, whatever is Torah, has been given, and now it's your responsibility at that point to work it out. That's all it means. It's a technical thing. But here it is technical, because here, if you forget a halacha, is it possible that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can come to a Navi and say, oh guys, you forgot about this? So maybe in a Hanami, maybe it only works one way. Maybe we're not allowed to ask Hashem, but if Hashem does it on his own unilaterally, maybe that is okay. Anyway, I'll leave it as an open question for now, but that is definitely something to think about. So, the Gemara at this point says, what's going on with Rabbi Yochanan? It's a contradiction. According to Rabbi Yochanan, is Arava Yesoid Nevi'im, or is it Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai? The Gemara says, really, essentially, it's Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai. But because they forgot about it, the Nevi'im had to come along and reinstitute it. That's why it's not called a Takanas HaNevi'im, it's called a Yesoid HaNevi'im, because Shchachum, they forgot about it, Chazruva Yasdum, and they founded it once again, but it was not really their own Takana. It would really go back to Halacha L'Moshe Mi'Sinai. So then the Gemara says, "Did Rabbi Yochanan really say that?" Last line on the page. No, how do you read this? Hold on a second. That. Dilchayin kamo. Amre dilchayin. He, which means that Rabbi Yochanan said to the people that were from Eretz Yisrael, originally I thought that basically the, I don't want to say responsibility, but the correct understanding, if we want to know what's the MS, in Torah, we'll have to ask the Yidden that were from Eretz Yisrael. Because they didn't end up in Babel, and they didn't end up with the complications of Galus and not being able to learn Torah and all of the torture and everything that people went through in Galus. They were in Eretz Yisrael. Not that life was always easy in Eretz Yisrael, but at least they weren't being influenced in the same way and forced in the same way to do things like in Bavel. So I originally thought that that's who you have to trust is the Eden from Eretz Yisrael. But now, Amri, I see nowadays, Delahoy Nehi, that the Torah is actually belongs to those who went to Bavel. In other words, what Rabbi Yochanan meant, whenever he said this exactly, was that if you can only trust the Yidden in Eretz Yisrael, you can't trust the Yidden in Bavel, it's because, you know, they're very forgetful and they don't know what happened, and because of the Galus, they forgot things. And the implication of this line of Rabbi Yochanan is that he came to the awareness that that's not correct. That in Bavel, they never really forgot anything, and they kept track of everything very, very well. And originally I thought that wasn't the case, but now I see that it is. So if that's what he meant, so then they didn't forget things in Bavel. Now you're saying they did forget things, that the Nevi'im had to reinstitute them? Well, make up your mind. Rabbi Yochanan thought they did forget things in Bavel, or they didn't forget things in Bavel. So again, you read the Gemara like this. Did Rabbi Yochanan really say that? That the Nevi'im had to shchachum, they forgot mechad v'yastum, and they had to come back and reinstitute it? But didn't Rabbi Yochanan say Dilchoin? Originally I thought that the Torah belongs to those from Eretz Yisrael. Amri, but then he said Dilchoin ahi. I see that he didn't forget things, and that really the Torah belongs to those from Bavel. They kept track of things.
But so is he then saying that those in Israel did forget? Is he just saying that?
No, well, the Gemara is using it to just point out that they didn't forget things in Bavel. That so the implication
putting,
of
Rabbi Yochanan. He's just bringing up Bavel.
Yeah. So the Gemara answer is Kan b'mikdash, Kan b'gvulin. What does that mean? That Rashi b'mikdash halacha l'moshe misinai, b'gvulin yisoid neviim. Wait. What does it mean? So originally we said Rabbi Yochanan thought that the neviim reinstituted the halacha l'moshe misinai. Now they were saying something else. No. In the times of Beis HaMikdash, and the halachas of the Beis HaMikdash, are halachah l'moshe misinai. There's no question about that. What did Rabbi Yochanan mean when he said, Yisoid Nevi'im? He meant that it's a takana of the Nevi'im when there's no Beis HaMikdash. In the Gvulin, that's called Yisoid Nevi'im. Not in the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara's original understanding was, in the Beis HaMikdash was Yisoid Nevi'im, so that's how he had to work it out. What do you mean, Masalach HaMoshe Misinai? Now the Gemara says, no. We're talking about what we do Bezman HaZeh. What we do Bezman HaZeh in Begvulin. What's the story? Wait a minute. So that changes things, no? Let's try to work this all out. We're going to stop here. But let's try to work this all out. So we thought that outside Beis HaMikdash, there's no halacha of Arava, right? No halacha of Arava. The halacha of Arava outside Beis HaMikdash was a Zecher LaMikdash. Now the Gemara seems to be saying something else, right? That outside Beis HaMikdash is either a Minig Nevi'im or Yesoid Nevi'im. So what does that mean? If it's Yesoid Nevi'im, and now we don't understand why it's called Yesoid, by the way. We have to go back to understand that. But it's either a Takana from the Nevi'im or it's a Minig from the Nevi'im. So what do you mean? It's not a Zecher LaMikdash? Or that was a Zecher LaMikdash? It's just a question of how the Zecher LaMikdash was instituted. Was the Zecher LaMikdash a Minig? Was the Zecher LaMikdash a Din D'Rabbanan? So the Gemara leaves us totally hanging on this. And does Rashi say a word? Not a word. All right. Anyway, there's a big Tosfos over here. We'll see if he deals any of these issues. But that's the conclusion that Gemara comes to now, is that when we have our Aravis, what we do, Bezman HaZeh, do we view that as a minig that was instituted, not instituted in a technical way, but just instituted, a minig that was started by the Nevi'im? Or is it actually a Dinder Abanan, and we would call it a Yisoid or a Takana of Nevi'im? It's actually technically a Dinder Abanan outside the Beis HaMikdash.